Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 22nd, 2016. You're listening to the best poker cast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Man, you should see me right now. I've got this awesome one of those.
The great thing about doing Skype is I don't have to see
you. I know, and you often want to, though. That's what's scary. You often bring it up that you want to. But in this case, I would have let you see me because I have on a huge brown blanket, and I have it pulled over my head. I am freezing, and I kind of look like like a Jedi Knight, you know.
You're a reclusive Luke.
I am, and I actually am, because I got that little brownish-gray beard going, you know. I probably would look like him if it took a picture.
Put on some pounds since the last movie, right?
Yeah, I think so. So, yeah, I've definitely put on some pounds since his last movie, because I weighed like 48 pounds when that movie came out, so.
Yeah, you know what? I don't think we're going to get a lot of sympathy from most of our listeners, because I with you, am just bone-chilled cold right now.
Right.
But in our defense, this is why we moved to Florida, right? It's to not be cold.
That's right.
So our complaints should have more importance than complaints from the people in Minnesota who haven't yet learned that they cannot live in Minnesota.
Right. They've willingly stayed there.
Yes.
They chose to be there.
So when they go, whoa, wine, I'm like, yes, I'm going to wine, because it should not be cold here.
When we signed up for Florida.
Now, when you whine about the cold, oh, it's negative 10. No, you don't get the wine.
No.
That's the deal. That's in the brochure.
That's right. You had the option.
Yep.
You knew what the rules were.
Right.
But the blankets keep me warm, so I'm ready to go if you are.
We were in the car the other night. It was 61 degrees. But it was like wind chill. It felt like 20.
Yeah.
Right? And I got in there, and I paid for those seat warmers in that car I bought my wife, and I turned that bad boy on. 61 degrees, opposed to that, and people were like, you gotta be kidding me. I'm like, I am not kidding you, I am cold.
You know, it reminds me, too, when the Minnesota Vikings football game was on, and it said, it's -6, yeah. But the wind chill makes it -20, and then it had feels like minus, and I'm like, feels like? Who's telling you what it feels like? And they got like Bertha in the stands, and they walk up to her, hey Bertha, it's only -6, but what does it feel like to you? Where do they get that feels like from? Who's the person? Who's the barometer for it feels like 30 below?
I also wonder about the person that actually sees the difference between -6, -20, and -40.
That's right. They're so sensitive. They can know the difference between those 3 degrees.
Ooh, it's balmy. Ah, wind is gone. It's -6 now.
It's warming up, baby.
Oh, man. All right. Well, I guess we're a poker show still for now.
But, yeah.
So we'll go ahead and talk some poker. And last night was our second annual Restock the Shelves Food Bank Initiative with Blue Shark Optics that we've been just burrowing into your brains for the last, 4 or 5 months, right?
Yeah.
And, wow, it was really, really good so far, and we have some more events to go, and we've only heard from 1/3 of our properties that have participated with their totals right now, and already the tote board is up more than 36,000 people fed. And last year, that total was just north of 43,000. So I have no doubt we're going to eclipse that. And that's good, because I kind of went into last night feeling a little bad. You know, I worked really hard on this, I thought, but not hard enough. I was really hoping to get twice as many rooms as we did last year, and we didn't. We got about the same number. Picked up some new ones, lost some ones. And so I really didn't know what to expect, but I tell you, before I drove out last night to my event here, and we'll talk about that in a minute, I got an email from Lucky Chances out in Colma, California, my new favorite room.
Mm-hmm.
And they let me know that not only did their players donate $2,940, not including cans, $2,940 just for the players, which is astounding in itself. But Lucky Chances went ahead and matched that as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
That was just a massive start to what's been a great event. So, and then I don't want to forget to mention our good friends at kickerprom.com, who actually designed our official Restock the Shelves t-shirts, donated all their profits to animal shelters in Las Vegas and South Florida, because animals need to eat too.
That's right.
But you went out to Derby Lane, right?
Yes, I did. Yes,
and,
I did.
And it sounded like a huge event there.
It was. I couldn't believe. It's so funny. We always talk about how poker players like do things last minute. And, you know, people were showing up for this with their cans like 45 minutes after the start because they were still coming. People were still trying to make it. You know, they probably had to get off work early or whatever it was. But I thought they were going to fill the entire place because people just kept coming.
That's great.
Which was really kind of cool. I mean, it was almost 150 people in this tournament, and once I had a dealer come up to me, and then I had one of the runners who do the betting for the dogs and everything, you know, come up to me and say, "What's going on today? Because this is a bigger tournament than we ever get on a Monday afternoon." And I said, "Oh, it's the Restock the Shelves." She's like, "Oh, that's right, you know." And it's for, you know, the local food shelters here. And people just kept coming up and going over to the cage to sign up, and they had their little bags of food, you know, the cans and stuff in their bags, and it was really pretty cool. A lot of people, I knew a lot of people who were playing, which is really, really excellent. You know, they're showing love and everything, and it was just a great event. And I mean, yeah, I was shocked. It was almost 150 people, and they had about 150 items to donate. And when people say, "Oh, how did 150 people only bring 150 items?" That's not true. A lot of people were just playing in the tournament, didn't know that was going on that day.
Right. Yeah.
So then that means, like, I donated like 25 cans myself. And then so a lot of people donated their stuff, brought in two or three cans each. It's just that some people who were there on a Monday afternoon and wanted to play in a tournament happened to play in this tournament. So they didn't all know about it or bring cans. But so, you know, it was a really good turnout. And it was nice to see everybody getting together and talking about it and just chatting and stuff. So it was great.
That's great. Yeah. And then the evening I went up to Tampa Bay Downs and I flop quad kings.
Nice.
And I got a $50 tournament entry that I can't use because I'm on a plane tomorrow morning. But I got something out of it, right? But no, it was fun to play with folks again. And then I got up early this morning, and Tampa Bay Downs now runs the former Tampa Greyhound poker room called TGT Poker now.
Right.
And I drove over this morning, and they had an event yesterday. Tampa Bay Downs actually added their 1 o'clock event at the last minute as 1-2 and collect money as well, too. So collected all that money and food and dropped it off to charity myself this morning. So, you know, and it kind of makes you really realize what you're doing when you're actually pulling in the parking lot and handing over money and canned goods when you see people actually showing up at the center to get that stuff, right?
Right.
So, it was really, really a good reminder of why we're doing this. And for folks that didn't make it out and want to help, don't worry. There's still a couple events left. We tried to do them all on January 18th, Martin Luther King Day. But lots of rooms schedule them at other times. And we've got a couple coming up later this week and next week still. So there's still time for you to go out. Go to antiupmagazine.com/restock and maybe find an event to play in. And if not, you can just go to feedingamerica.org. And you can make a cash donation there as well, too. It doesn't have to be tied to what we're doing. People are going to be hungry regardless of what we do or not. So.
Yeah, just feels really good. I took all the food that they donated, all the cans and stuff, and I stacked them on a table for a photo for the magazine. You know, just stacking them up like you know, like those kids do with the cups, you know, in those competitions,
yeah, yeah.
You know. And you just start seeing, I start imagining all these meals that people are going to have with this food and stuff. And it just makes you feel real good, and I'm glad we're still doing this and going to continue to do it. It's great.
Yeah, it's kind of cool you mentioned that because I thought about that, too. And I'm looking at, like, one can, right? It's just one can, you know, I don't know, it's a dollar or whatever at the grocery store, right?
Right.
But, you know, and it just seems weird. It'd be nice to, like, kind of follow that can.
Yeah.
Just see where it goes and
yeah.
See the person that, you know, for us, maybe a dollar can item is not what we're excited about for dinner tonight. But that person that gets it's going to be really happy with it and just to see that and actually That would be kind of cool.
You know what else I like doing? I don't want to extend our show any longer than I need to, but I like to look at the photos that come in, and you kind of get an idea of the culture of the area, of like what the foods that's getting donated. Like in L.A., there might be some side of food. You know, it's Florida, you see a lot of like – you see some beans and refried beans. And it's a different area, donate different foods, and it's really cool. And just I try to imagine the meals that they're going to make, and it's just – it's really excellent. You know, lots of – oh, somebody donated a giant can of ravioli. I mean, it was huge. It was like the Sam's Club type. You know what I mean? That's awesome. I mean, that's awesome. You know, that's a meal for a family right there. So it was just, it's really excellent and really just motivating, you know, really excellent stuff.
Oh, I'm sorry. One more thing I have to mention. Knockout Poker USA in Cary, North Carolina. They can't play for money there, but they did a $10 donation event with $10 rebuys. And world champion Greg Raymer was on hand for it and gave away a they made a trophy out of the fossil. You know, he gets the fossil.
Yeah.
They actually made a trophy out of it to give to the winner last night. And you know, I expect to see these totals at some of the bigger casinos, but they raised $2,000 plus 1,500 pounds of food as well too.
Holy cow.
At this place called Break Time Billiards in Cary, North Carolina. So you don't have to be a big venue or a big person to make a big difference. So
that's awesome.
I want to be sure I mentioned those folks.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic.
All right, so a little bit different than giving back to the community, or maybe giving back to the community in a different way. That's a better way of saying it, right?
Yeah.
So poker players are looking for every edge they can get to the table, right, Chris?
Yep.
And, some are even looking for more even than that, right? And if that's you, a pro poker player and shoe hoarder, Best Shack wants to help. And according to New York City Daily News, Shaq's $1,000 an hour private poker lessons include tips for picking up, quote, Mr. Right at the poker table. So, yeah, you give her $1,000, you sit down, she shows you how to play poker, and she's no slouch. She's had certainly way more success than we have, right?
Yeah.
And then I guess in between telling you, you know, how to get a read on your player, she's going to tell you, hey, that guy's into you.
That guy's into you. Well, I mean, is she equal opportunity? I mean, could she help you find Ms. Wright, too? Or, you know, I mean, is it just, I mean, it's got to be, you double your clientele that way if you offer it up to both sides.
I'm guessing that she's an expert, right?
So yeah.
She's probably not an expert at finding the Ms. Wrights. Maybe.
You never know. Could be the same signals, you know?
I mean, maybe get a discount. Maybe it's like, you know, hey, I haven't done this very often, so how about $500?
How about $500 an hour to find Ms. Wright?
Oh, but you know, she's going to have a full calendar of this too, right? You know, New York, lots of money, you know, lots of people are looking for private poker lessons anyhow. And of course, you know, there's like 190 dating shows on TV and 4,000 dating sites. People are looking for love anywhere they can, right? So
she also, and I read the story, and it wasn't exactly the most flattering thing that they wrote about her. But,
well, it's New York Daily News. They don't make anybody look good.
Well, I mean, I read the bloggy thing on Cards Chat or whatever. I don't know if that was lifted from it. But, yeah, it wasn't exactly the most flattering thing. But she has other things, too. She has a patented medical gown.
Yes.
And
Well, so, I mean, that's an important thing, too. I mean, I fortunately have been a very healthy person. I haven't had to wear that gown. But, you know, I always thought that was going to be the gold rush right there.
Yeah.
Come up with a gown that your ass didn't come out of, right? I mean, really, how hard is it? I know you got to be able to get to you quickly, too, right? But, I mean, got to be a way to oversound, and Beth figured it out.
They said it looks more like a bathrobe with a hole in it, and it has a full patent on it. It's patented, so.
You got to have a patent these days.
Yeah. And she also has some recipes, including mom's cheesecake that she's selling. So, sounds like she's trying to continue the entrepreneur thing and make some more money.
She sells Tupperware too, for all we know.
Yeah, but what do you think about this, though? I mean, do you think there's some legitimate?
Hey, I say, good job, Beth. You know, hey, if you can get $1,000 an hour for anything legal, you know, illegal is easy, right? But legal,
right?
You're doing something right.
Right.
Because the funny thing is, you know, I was thinking about this, is that I was watching, I forget what movie it was. I was catching up on West Wing again, right? I was talking about this recently, right? So, like, season 4, so way back 13 years ago. And they had this trauma expert that helped Josh Lyman out, right, after the shooting. and then came in later, helped the president out, and he said something like, I get $375 an hour. And I laughed at that. I'm like, $375 for the shrink that helps the president? I don't know what that is in these dollars now, but that's like $1,500, $2,000 now, right? So $1,000 an hour, that's a pretty good deal. I mean, yeah. Look at all the people that are like, oh, we can't give the fast food guy $15 an hour, and Best Jack's getting $1,000 an hour? All right, so more power to you. That's great. And, you know, I'm going to say the people that got $1,000 to give her an hour have $1,000 to give her an hour.
And yeah, yeah.
Just want to learn how to play poker and flirt a little bit, and obviously she's good at both, so.
Yeah. I got to tell you, though, if you have $1,000 an hour to give away, you don't need to worry about finding the guy. He'll find you.
Well, but no, at that point, now you're picky.
Yeah, I guess. I
mean, this isn't the...
If you're picky, you're not looking for him at the poker table, then.
This is the women that are trying to figure out who's on the other end of the catfish on MTV here. These are people that have that could put a lineup up and say, nah, not you. No, not you.
All right, Annie updates. We only have staterooms reserved for our April 18th Annie Up Poker Cruise out of Port Canaveral, Florida through February 1st. So book today. Get all the details on this cruise and our other sailings to Alaska and the Caribbean next year at AnnieUpCruises.com. Also, listeners have flooded us with hands of the week, but we're still in need of listener spotlight and call to floor submissions. So email us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com. Call our hotline at 206-424-6145 or post in the Annie Up group discussions on PokerRadius.com and you might get on the show. All right. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com. We'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. This is Brian. He says, we're in a tournament in Atlantic City Casino and he has just one card. He asked the dealer where my other card was, and she says, I don't know, look for it. Sounds like she went to the same school as the guy who told me I was SOL.
Yeah, there you go.
He says, I looked everywhere but couldn't find it. The floor said it was on me, and I could fold or call the 1,300 bet in front of me. Everyone got a laugh. As a goof, I called the bet, and the player next to me gave me a high five. I did not improve on the flop and folded.
Oh, boy. All right, Elliot says, how very generous of that dealer to let you continue with only one card. Most times, too many or too few cards in a hand render that hand dead. If you started the hand with two cards, where did the other card go? I'm sure the supervisor and the gaming commissioner are at least a little curious. If you started the hand with only one card, why did you not alert the dealer then? In a tournament, it would have been a missed deal. After the action starts, any player that knowingly plays a hand with too many or too few cards has a dead hand and forfeits any chips bet in that hand. This player usually has surveillance watching them closely for the rest of the session to boot. Players must protect their hands at all times. It's just a very long way of saying, pay attention!
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so two things could have happened here, and Elliot tried to address both of them. So what I'm guessing the dealer thought happened, and this happens often, right? When they have that really good flick. You know, they get some torque behind that throw.
Yes.
And that card skips, like, right under the rail, because the rails come off so they can clean them, right?
Right.
And that's probably what she thought, or he thought, I don't know what it was, as a dealer, happened. And, you know, maybe it's the end of the shift and just, you know, they don't give any anymore. They're done.
Right.
Just pick up the rail, find it, right? So if that's the case, then yeah, it's on you to find the card. But if you never got the card, which I think is what Brian's saying, and hey, I don't think I ever got the card, that's a different story.
I agree. I don't think he got the card either, because they would have went to the rail. And then why wouldn't they count the cards right there?
You know, it was the first thing I said when I wrote back to Brian. I'm like, you know, hey, I'm a little confused as to whether you had the card or not based on what you said. It seems like the dealer seemed to think you had it. You seem to think you didn't. But regardless, at that point, I think somebody has to call the floor and they got to count the deck down.
Yeah,
right?
Count the deck down.
How do you know? I mean, if you got the card and you palmed it, you know, it's in your boot now. You got an ace, literally an ace up your sleeve for the next hand. they got to figure out where that card is right now. They can't just, like, continue the hand and
right.
Play with one card if you want, which is obviously wrong on so many levels.
That was hilarious, though.
So many questions here. Wow.
Yeah, and it was definitely a tournament, so that's what's funny is, you know, he said that in a tournament it should have been a missed deal.
Yeah, yeah.
And they didn't do that, so it's interesting. You know, it's one thing to interpret rules. It's another thing to know the rule is there and to not know it or to not look it up or... You know what I mean? If it's a rule, it's a rule. So why wasn't the rule followed? You know, these guys really need to know their rules if they're going to be floors and supervisors.
And I'll tell you this, too. If you're in a cash game where there's a promotion going on, you know, high hand or whatever.
Yeah.
You, as funny as it might be to go, all right, I'll play with one card and high five the guy next to you, you're not going to get that high hand.
No.
Most of them, both cards in your hand have to play anyhow. But most, they're never going to pay you a jackpot when you don't have a proper hand. So, you know.
And correct me if I'm wrong, though, doesn't it screw with everyone else's hands, too?
Oh, yeah, if anybody else.
Right, so if somebody lost a high hand or a bad beat jackpot to you because you had one card and were fooling around, you get your ass whooped.
You would not leave that room.
No. You don't. This is not funny stuff. It sounds funny, but it's really not, guys.
Jack Bauer will be waiting for you in the parking lot, and he's not going to go get you.
Jack Bauer. Hey, we get to complete O'Malley's move today. Here comes part one to refresh our memories.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're seated in a low $10 buy-in 10-player sit-and-go. There are some very new players to this game, and some players that know what they're doing. We've lost two players. It's early in the third round, and we're up 500 units. We sit with 5,500. Blinds are 75-150, with 30-minute levels. Top three get paid $60, $30, $10. The blinds post, and we're under the gun with two red tens. There are two bigger stacks than we have. We make it 450 to go, our standard raise. It's folded to an MP who makes the call. This player has a smaller stack than us and is fairly new to the game of poker. The button calls. This player is probably the best at the table, knows when to fold and when he can push someone off their hand. He is the chip leader with 7,000. The blinds fold. With 1350 in the pot, the flop is 6-4 deuce. All spades. Ugh. What an ugly flop. And here's more bad news, we're first to act. But we did raise preflop, and we do have an overpair. There's a chance we have the best hand at this point, or at the very least, we could represent an even bigger hand than what we have. Our stack is now at 50-50, that's well over 30 big blinds. We put a bet of 800 into the pot. Both players call relatively quickly. The turn is the 5 of clubs. The pot has ballooned to 3750. We took our chance and it didn't pan out. We are ready to give up the hand. We check and are surprised when both players check behind us. This is getting more interesting. Maybe we're good. The pot is the same, and the river is the 9 of hearts. We think about making a bet, but ultimately decide not to. Maybe we're playing too scared? The MP checks and the button makes a bet of 2250. We have 4250 left. If we call and lose, we're down to 2,000. What's the move?
I'm going to say it's way too early in this tournament for me to make a gut check call like this. There is obviously a strong possibility that the button, who has been described as the best player at the table, is making a move here, attempting to exploit the weakness he's seen. But guess what? That's what he's supposed to do in this position. For me, I don't see enough reward for the risk to call off half our remaining chips to find out whether we're good or not when we have tons of poker left to play. I'm folding.
Given the description, it feels like two things. It's either a missed flush or a three. So if I play with him long enough, then I feel like he makes his moves often, then I'd call. If not, I'll fold. But let's call for two reasons. After all those checks, it could just be a steal, and like you said, he's in position, it's what he would normally do, so I feel like a call here might be warranted. And the other thing too is we always like to play differently than you, so whatever you say, I'm going to do the opposite just to have an interesting final thought. So here we go, here's what happens in part two.
Hello again. So this perfect bet by the best player at the table smells fishy. It's almost too perfect. He asked position and has acted aggressively after two players ahead of him checked on consecutive betting rounds. This seems like a standard power of position bet. I don't think I'm resolved enough to raise here, but I'm going to take the chance that we're good. If we're wrong, we still have about 13 big blinds, so enough to make some moves. If we're right, we're the chip leader. We make the call and the MP folds. Probably a good call. the chip leader says, flipping over the ace of spades, nine of diamonds. We turn over our tens and rake in the pot. We take the chip lead and ultimately never look back, winning the tournament after defeating the same opponent heads up when we get it all in pre-flop with tens. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying just because the board is scary doesn't mean you need to play scared. I hope to see you on the felt.
Bravo! I guess I feel a little like condition rounders here. I see all the angles, but I don't have the stones to take the shot. As I said, it definitely sounded like it was a position raise on his part, and even though I was wrong for not making the call, I'm going to stand by my claim that it's too much risk to take this early in the tournament. O'Malley was comfortable continuing with the 13 big blinds if he was wrong. This short stack ninja was not.
You know, being different than you has paid off for me so much in my career, and this is no different. My gut has served me well. Which means that I went with my gut, and sometimes you have to go with the read of their story and throw caution to the wind. I felt like he still had half the stack that he started with, and it was early enough in the tournament, you know, 2250 into a, so I still have 2,000 chips left, but it was 75-150. I probably could still get that done, so I don't mind that call.
Done, I guess it's, you know, and I know we already had some discussion on our PokerRadius.com about this, and it's definitely, this is a Republican-Democrat thing, you know. You're either on one side or the other.
Yeah.
You know, either it's, oh my God, this guy's totally making a move, you got to call here. Or, yeah, he's probably making a move, but it's not worth the risk. And I don't think anybody's going to convince the other side that they're wrong here. But, you know, I'll give him all the credit. I really did think that we were good there. I just didn't think the risk was worth it. And I think that guy knew it. I think he made a bet that most players, like me, would say, you know what? Even though if they think I'm totally full of BS, I'm betting too much for them to make it. And that's a good player, I think. Now, obviously, you guys would have called, so he would have got screwed. But I think that guy gets folds out of 60, 75% of the players with that move.
Probably. You know, it is the story. It's the story that's being told. And you're even convincing yourself that a player would make that move in that spot, and you said it on more than one occasion there. So if you were able to do that calmly at the table, I think you might have made that call. You know?
Well, you know, but again, it comes down to the fact that I think it's a 50-50. I think it's a coin flip at that point.
Yeah,
you know, I guess maybe I can spend more time staring at him, maybe talking to him, all that kind of stuff that people do to try to get to tip the scale a little bit. But at the end of the day, I got to like, you know, hey, is this guy got it or not? I don't think he does, but he very well could.
Okay.
It's too early. I mean, if we're late in the tournament, then where I got to kind of go time, and I'm not talking about just short stack. I'm talking, you know, decent stack. At that point, I need to move. Then, yeah, I may make that move. But, you know, those chips are super valuable to me right now. And I don't want to go into ninja mode in level 3 just because I want to be a bravado man.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and the other thing, too, is I always like to say something like, well, it's only a $10 sit and go. If I'm wrong, it's 10 bucks. But at the same time, you can't think that way. You gotta. What if it was a $1,000 sit and go? You're going to let the money dictate how you play now? So, yeah, I understand what you're saying. I listened to what you had to say when you were bringing it up, and to me it just seems like you even noticed that that's what the player is supposed to do in that position, is supposed to steal the pot.
Absolutely.
And we have an overpair to the entire board on making that call. So, all right, cool.
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's situation comes from... Oh, great. Sorry. My iTunes wants to update right now. Thanks, Steve Jobs. That's why I don't have an Apple. This week's hand situation comes from Ed Rinder. And first, he hopes that you and I had a fantastic holiday season and New Year, Chris.
We absolutely did.
Very nice.
Oh, I did. I can't speak for you, but I did. We did in my household, I mean.
Oh, very good. All right. Now he says, I did okay in most cash games I played, but bubbled all but two tournaments I played all year.
Oof.
Those two, I went out early, so no cashes. Probably because he thought that guy was making a move, right?
Yeah.
And decided, hey, I'm going to call.
And he was wrong.
Right. I couldn't even get a bounty in the two bounty tournaments I played. Ouch.
Man.
As close as I came, I flopped trips, got the guy all in, only for him to hit runner straight. Always happens.
Yep.
Rough year, but I still enjoy playing. So he says, the hand I have for you today is all in on the flops, and more of a scenario. I was playing 1-2 cash game at the Horseshoe Casino in Cincinnati, my home state. before I got cold.
Right.
First time I ever played there, he says, I sat down and bought in for $100. The min is 50. The max is 300. I'd been playing for about 4 hours, and I was down as low as $60, but doubled up with a call with a pair of aces. The guy who's missed, who has a missed streak couldn't believe I made the call. I was running pretty card dead all night, as was one as that was one of only two hands I showed down. I used type play and image to build myself up to 246 Skittles. A new guy sat down. Most table knew him, so I figured he was a regular. He bought in for 300 and said he was just waiting on a 2-5 table. Why not? My initial thought when he sat down was, quote, this game just changed. Get up! I'm going to pause right here and say, yep, get up.
Because of one player?
Well, no. I mean, if you know the game has changed, and, you know, why play a bad game? It's a cash game, not a tournament.
But hang on. He just went down, up, down, and built it all the way back up to 246, so he's playing well at the current table. One player sits in who wants to play in a different game, and now you're going to leave? Because of one player.
Maybe.
No. That is not. I can't believe you agree with that. I mean, really? Because one guy walks over and says, oh, I'm just waiting for 2-5. It doesn't mean he's a good player.
It only takes one guy to completely change the fact.
Yeah, but you don't know that yet. He just sat down.
No, but all right. Well, he's probably summarizing after the whole event, right?
I don't know. If it's just one guy and...
hands and he's raising every time and making 100 go or something, then the game has changed. I'm going to get
off. Yeah, but we don't have those details. You said, guy who sat down and said, I'm waiting for 2-5. Right. The game's changing. I'm leaving.
You know, we're also profiling. We're allowed to do that at the poker table, right?
I know a lot of idiots who play 2-5.
When a guy sits down the max, he's a regular, waiting on a 2-5 table, and we're in a 1-2 game, that means he's just going to splash around and have fun because he doesn't take this game seriously.
Oh, man. That's all the more reason to take him for his money, because he's going to not give us any respect. I just would not leave. I'd at least play a little while, see what this guy's going to be like.
Oh, maybe he did. You know, maybe this is a Hollywood movie where you have to compress time elements to get it into 2 hours.
Yeah, get the montage going.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to pay $12 to go to the theater and watch 4 years of World War II, right?
It depends who's in it.
Got to get that stuff down to 2 hours. I mean, it's going to be Ben Affleck and Josh Hartnett, right?
That's right.
Kate Beckinsale. That was almost 4 years long, that movie.
That movie was forever.
All right, he says, I talked myself into playing one more round. So there you go, Chris.
Nice, there you go.
One more round.
But he shouldn't have talked himself into it. He should have been eager to do it.
I don't know about eager. Accepting.
Okay.
True to my initial read, he raised each of the first four hands he's in and won them all.
All right, seat change. Seat change. Table change.
Am I going to stay there and lose all my money just to not look like a wimp? Chris Cassens' eye.
Table change, please.
All right, then he straddled for $5 after the big blind. It was folded me. Let's see, two players. So still five people to act. I looked down at ace of spades, jack of spades. I mean, it was a situation. I guess we'll play it out as a hand of the week.
Oh, jeez. Well, I put my pad away thinking it was a situation. Now I gotta get my pad again. Hang on.
Wait, where'd you put it? Do you have a lockbox?
Yeah, I got up and walked across the room. Now all right, I'm back. Okay, so we have ace of spades, jack of spades. And there's a straddle on with five people left to act. And we don't know how this guy plays a straddle, but we clearly know this guy loves to just disrupt everything.
He's exactly the player that Ed and I knew he would be, and you didn't want to believe.
Yeah, I was ignorant.
You wanted to see it with your own eyes.
I was. I'm by nature a skeptic, so I need empirical evidence these days. Okay, so I would... the last time this happened to me... Or I had a guy like that at my table, or I knew he was going to shove all in or make really crazy things. I just called and let him do his stupid stuff, and then I called again and then had him crushed and double through him. So,
winner. That's the way to play it, I think.
Yeah, maybe I'll just call. Let him do what he wants to do and then take my ace-jack and go, look at this. I have ace-jack of spades. I thought it was blackjack, but it doesn't matter. Still good enough to beat your, you know, off. He's just crazy, this guy, sounds like. So that's what I'm going to do. What are you going to do?
I'm just going to call here and let him raise, and I'll call and see a flop, and we'll see what happens then.
And if he shoves pre-flop, I'll
call. Here's the thing. Here's the reason I don't want to raise now, because, you know, one, we're really out of position. We're in the big blind.
Yeah.
And ace-jack is not a hand that I feel too confident with. Now, it's suited, obviously. It's a hand that I feel a lot more confident after I see a flop. If it's a jack-high flop... you know, if we got some straight cards working, if we get our
spades,
then I feel a little more confident. But right now, to me, it's like it's a set mining hand, I think. So yeah, I'm going to set mine-ish, you know, call here, knowing he's probably going to raise, and I'm going to be comfortable calling a raise, depending on what happens after that. And then we'll see what happens. But I don't want to raise here and poke the bear, because this guy is probably going to re-raise us. And then I'm going to be maybe heads up against a guy that plays bigger than we do.
It doesn't necessarily mean he's better, but he plays bigger. So
plays bigger, yeah.
Yeah, so. All right, well, we're calling. What does Ed do?
Ed raises to $25. And I think he's poking the bear, right?
Yeah, I think so. Since we know this guy has shown aggression, I'm not really wanting to go to the mat. Like, if I'm going to go to the mat with ace-jack of spades with this guy, I'm going to want to, like, shove on him. You know, because I think that he's just going to be doing it.
With that too, right? I mean, I agree. And the problem is that he could have deuce four and be pretty close to us, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because it's like 60-40 at that point anyway.
Yeah. That's not what I want to do. I mean, if I got, you know, a big pair, I got jacks or higher here, then yeah, then I'll take my chances.
This is why you commit five and you see him do something crazy like make it 25, then you come back and make it all in. Now, is he going to call all in, or is he going to be like, all right, you got me, and then fold and you get that dead money? Or you got a pretty decent hand going in if he calls your all in. You know, the odds of him waking up with a hand better than ace-jack or dominating ace-jack are pretty rare. So, you know, that's why I like the call, not the raise. Because now if he comes over the top for like 150 to you, what are you going to do with ace-jack? You going to shove on him? Because now he has to call anyway. Now you're up to 60-40. But if you only called and he made it 25 or 30, then you can shove on him for your 250, and then he's like, oh, or whatever, you know, whatever you make it, you know. So it's the leverage thing that's going on here.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so it folds back around to our villain, and he said, "Gotta see, I call." And you know, I gotta say, I played my first tournament of the year last week. I went and proofed pages, and then of course I played the restock last night. And last night I wasn't too annoyed, other than I had a drunk guy that was like not in the game that wanted to quiz everybody about their favorite hockey players, which is like the most annoying thing ever. At volume 12, right? But the first tournament, it was like everything that annoys me at a poker table came out that one time. And one of them is these stupid phrases like, gotta see it.
Okay, that annoys you.
Oh, no, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, you go to a football game, you know, they have that one sliver of a section up in the nosebleed section that's alcohol-free.
Yeah.
The people that don't want to have people like me sitting next to them.
Yeah.
I think there should be one sliver of a table in the nosebleed section at the poker room that's for no-nonsense players. No stupid sayings, not watching the horses play, not fumbling around getting a massage, just there to play poker. And play poker.
That's funny. I thought horses raced. I didn't know they played. That'd be kind of cool watching horses play. Horses playing poker. That's the new the new Coolidge painting I want, though. Horses playing poker.
All right. So this villain called. And excuse me. It says, really, I can place any two cards based on his play so far. But since I'm the first person to play back at him, I feel he either has a baby pair or an ace. I think you're right on your first read that we have no idea what he has.
Yeah, that sounds right to me. No idea.
Flop comes ace of clubs, jack of hearts, seven of spades, and the villain checks to us.
Well, we hit it nicely. There's 50-something out there. I got no reason not to make a bet of 40 or so. So I'll make a bet of 40 or so.
That sounds good to me, and it sounds good to Ed, who bet $45.
So this villain's in the small blind then, right? Is that right?
Apparently, that doesn't make sense.
Because we're in the big blind.
With the straddle and everything. But
yeah, I'm kind of confused.
All I can do is read the email, so.
Well, if we are in a position, then I would bet. If we're not in position, I might check, because I want to see what he's so aggressive and crazy, he might do something. But, you know, since we're in position, apparently, I don't mind checking. I raise preflop, I'm keeping
this regardless, because my experience with these kind of people is if you give them a free card, they're going to take it.
Yeah.
Because they know they're going to be able to outplay you on the turn of river when things get dicey for you. I don't want to give him a free card here.
No, I'm definitely betting. I mean, I took the lead in the beginning, so if I don't bet, it looks fishy anyway. But on top of it, you know, I took control of the hand. Why would I not bet now? So I might as well bet. So even if I missed it, you know, he might think, oh, you have kings and you're afraid of the ace if I check it. And who knows? But in this case, I'm not giving this guy a free card, especially when he's a straddler. So he could have any two. I'm betting a bunch. So I'm betting like 40 or so.
Okay. Ed bets 45 and is raised to 150.
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere. I'm all in. I mean, even if he's got a set, I still have outs unless it's, you know, the set of eights or aces or jacks, which I doubt he would not re-raise with, but pre-flop. So
it'd be less likely because we have one of each.
So. Yeah, exactly. So there's no way I'm folding here, and there's no way I'm just calling and then giving him control and then wondering the rest of the hand. I mean, the only hand I'm afraid of is sevens, pocket sevens, you know? And if he really had a set, would he really raise us now, you know, and check raise us?
And if we just call, we're only leaving like $70 behind anyhow.
Yeah, so you're shoving.
Going to fold to anything? No, we're not. No. Yes, we've got to shove here.
We're right shoving.
Now. All right, our hero, sorry, looks at the board and him and think, what happened here? I asked trips. He looks right in my eyes. So I thought, no trips. I announce all in. He calls the last $26. Oh, I guess it's even less than we thought. Okay. And flips over ace of hearts, seven of clubs.
Nice.
The turn is a five of spades. The river is seven of hearts.
Oh, man.
The full house. As I stood there feeling like Phil Helmy was trying to figure out how unlucky I could get. I didn't hear the dealer ask me if I was done for the night or going to buy back in. I told him all good game and left. This obviously isn't the first beat I've taken. It won't be the last. This was, however, the most money I ever lost in a single hand. I thought about buying back in. I know I wouldn't have played right. He's going to go to a bigger table soon as it opens, so I wouldn't get my money back anyway.
Yeah, that's brutal. I mean, that's just brutal. Yeah, like I said, it's not that you played anything wrong, because you didn't really. We would have done some things differently, maybe. You know, like we said, we wouldn't have bet out or whatever when we had the ace-jack. I think I would have just called, let him do something crazy, come over the top of his ace-seven, and maybe he has to fold. But after the flop, you're all getting it in no matter what happens. So, you know, with his aggressiveness and your big hand, top two, you're getting it in. So you really didn't do anything wrong. It's just, you know, maybe you could have gotten away from this hand. Not gotten away from it. You could have taken this hand down before it got to the river.
Could have got it from the table left instead of listening to Cosenza.
Hey, he didn't listen to me. It was his own volition.
Send us your address. Cosenza's going to send you a check for $246 to make you whole there.
It's his own volition right there, buddy. He sent that hand in before I made my comments.
Yeah, I think as an actual situation, this is pretty weak because there's nothing we could have done to avoid this at all. This guy's not folding pre-flop to anything, I don't think. I suppose we shove, maybe doesn't call that, but that's a ridiculous play, so I'll take that off, right? And then once this flop comes, he's not going anywhere. This is like Christmas for him, and unfortunately, we didn't work out for us. So, but the reason I wanted it on the show was to talk about playing against these kind of guys, and I think we already had that conversation a little bit.
Yeah.
Anytime I see somebody that's waiting to go to a bigger game or is in a bigger game, they got that broke and now he's coming here. They're never going to be the tight aggressive. They're always going to be the loose aggressive. And if you can play against that, then that's great, fine, because they're going to give you a lot of action, and that's what some people want. But that's not my style, and I think that's Ed's style. And you know, at that point, begrudgingly, I think I'm just going to let somebody else be the victim that day.
I see. We just look at things differently when it comes to when we play for entertainment. I go for the challenge. So to me, if I got a player who's playing bigger than me sitting in my game, I think of it as a challenge. Can I beat this guy?
Well, bigger I don't mind, but I'm talking about loose aggressive here.
Well, I mean, you'll get a loose aggressive player at your table whether they're playing 1-3, 1-2,
or 2-5. It's a little different when they're used to playing 2-5. So the fact that this guy raised every hand for the first four, and now he's straddling, that's a guy that just it pushes me off of my game. Now, obviously, that's a weakness in me, in my game.
Right.
But the strength of my game is knowing that that's my weakness and to get the hell out of there.
Yeah, to me, if the guy is just too good, after a while, and I pick up on it, and I can't beat him, or I'm losing some money to him, and it's just not working out, I'm not going to be blinded by that and just keep pumping money into that game. I will get up. But at the beginning, I mean, I look at it as a challenge. It's why I go there. I want to get better.
Let me ask you this. So what is your normal game plan against a player like this?
Trapping.
All right. So exactly. That's what I would do, too. The problem with trapping is that now you have to have the goods, right?
Right.
You're not going to trap him with 7-tray offsuit.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So if you're waiting now, he's, and this is why I think that type of play is so effective, and I wish I could play that way, and I can't because I'm just not wired that way. Because now he's forced us into playing a game of people as a game of cards.
Well, for one hand, though. The minute I trap him and take money off of him, then he's never going to know if I'm trapping or not.
Right,
then I
used to my 20 ability. Hands without getting a decent hand.
Well, I go 20 hands without a decent hand in a regular game I'm still folding. It's got nothing to do with that guy. If I got crappy cards in a cash game, you know, I might expose position a few times to get my money back or to make some money against weaker players. But
sometimes you're going to do that pretty regularly, so you have to, right? But you're not going to do it against a guy like this that you know has zero chance of working because he's going to call you. He's going to raise you. He's going to. I mean, you're not going to be able to make those cutoff raises with 8-6 of diamonds like you do every once in a while just to keep people honest, because he's going to keep you honest.
Well, I just wait till I have position on him. Then there's a big difference between, you know, letting this guy dictate my action and me playing my game around him. You know, I mean, there's 8 other people at the table. You know, there are other people getting involved in hands, other people to expose. I don't always have to just focus on this one guy. That's how you lose.
Yeah, but you know he's going to be in every hand. That's the thing, is you have to pay attention to him.
I just
every other table, every other play at the table, you don't have to assume there's going to be in every hand and that style's going to play. Those people are going to fold regularly like most people do.
Well, like I said, I would pick and choose my spots. And it doesn't mean that I can't beat this guy either. You're assuming that he's going to win every hand because he's crafty.
I'm perfectly confident in my ability to trap him at one point.
Well, that's the game plan. That's not necessarily the only plan. The game plan going in is I'm going to try to trap him. If I can't trap him, then I'm going to outplay him. Or I'm going to pick up the hand that
right,
I can't.
So
you know
gonna
what I mean? It depends if I have position on him. If I have, I will choose position.
Position on him. Sometimes
then you don't get involved unless you have to.
All right, so that's what I'm saying. So now you're back to. I don't find it enjoyable to play poker against one person.
You're making it one person. I'm not. You clearly have made it one person here. You clearly have made it one person.
You have to respect him for taking over the table.
Oh, sure. I'm not saying that he's not someone to be careful around, but you can't make it all about him.
No, but what I'm saying is you can't do your normal stuff because you know that guy is there. Normally, I would raise every 10 or 11 hands with some junk at some point just to let people know that I'm not waiting around for good cards every time.
Right.
But if I do that in this game against this guy, it's not going to work.
But what you're now admitting is that you aren't willing to adjust your game, that you want to sit down, just play the game you want to play, and hope everyone fits neatly into your little world, and if they don't, you're going to leave.
Well, that's fair, but it's not really what I mean. What I mean is I don't know how to play against this guy other than just sit and wait for good cards and hope they hold up. And here's a great example. Ed actually got a hand, got the flop, outflopped the guy, and then the guy, of course, got lucky, because that's just what happens is they play so many hands that they're going to get lucky.
Yeah, but he played this well. He did what he was supposed to do, and if that 7 doesn't come, then he's taking a ton from this guy.
It always comes.
Oh, jeez. All right. Scott Wu Long. I appreciate this conversation, and I most of the time, though, I'll pick up a hand within 10 hands or so and trap the guy. It happens all the time with straddlers. There's no difference between a straddler and this guy. I don't leave when there's a straddler. I punish him when I get the hand. It just happens. You're going to get a hand once every few hands. And generally, I'm tight at a table anyway, so I'm used to folding 10, 12 hands in a row anyway. You know, it just happens. So eventually, I'm going to get a hand. I'm going to trap this guy. And if I'm in position with him, I'll try to outplay him. You know, I'm going to steal from him. I'm going to check raise when I'm out of position. Just depends. I'm going to find some way to play this guy because I'm not going to just keep giving up my table because some guy sat down on it and he's crazy. It just... And what if you have no choice and it's a tournament?
Well, yeah, a tournament you have to, so I'm fine with that.
Right, so you got to come up with a game plan.
Give up, but I mean, if I can get up and move to a table where I don't have to deal with this one guy taking over, why not do that?
Because you're not going to get any better. That's why. And when you face it in a tournament, then what do you do? Oh, I can't leave, so now I'm going to get my ass handed to me because I haven't taken all the time before to get better at playing against these type of people. That's why I try to play them, because it's challenging for me. And then I can use that experience later when it happens again, instead of running from it, and especially at a tournament. Because I can't run from him in a tournament. So I try to get better at it, that's all.
All right. Fair enough.
That was a great situation, Ed. I had no idea it was going to...
As I said, it was a terrible situation, but a great conversation.
Send your conversations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. I'm Chris Cazenza.
And I'm Scott Lott.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
All right, well, speaking of that, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline or emails us, and if we haven't won something from them in the past year, just like we do with Call the Foreign Hand of the Week, we'll send them something cool. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, which specializes in poker odds and math at poker911.net.
You know, I was going to stop you there because we don't actually have a listener spotlight, but you were just rolling there, and I thought our good friend Tom Gallagher could use the free advertising.
So. Well, give it to me then. I'll take the lesson for reading it because I could use it. Hey, we don't have a listener spotlight. See how desperate we are? We're trying to fill the show by just reading the stuff we don't have. Come on. I don't know. If it's in the show this week, you'll get a good laugh out of it. I may edit it out. Who knows?